Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, therapist Fiona Brennan answers one of your questions, and this time it's about holidaying with the in-laws. How creativity changes lives with the National Children's Arts and Health Charity Helium. And after a lifetime of teaching, learning and service, Jared Morgan took his experience in the academic sector and later as an executive coach into his first book, Becoming Your Best Possible Self. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, after becoming a shell of my former self following 2 weekends in a row away and very busy weeks in between, I took last weekend to do as little as possible. I even went so far as to turn down 2 lovely invitations, batten down the hatches for rest, food and watching movies. It was absolutely amazing. I got to catch up on a few long figure jobs around the house, which actually makes it sound like I didn't really chill out at all, but I promise I did. Anything I did was very much pottering about in nature. And one was literally in nature. I was planting with my daughter these bee bombs. I got sent all these bags of seeds and they've just been glaring at me from the corner of my office. So we even got out and made that happen and sorted out a few messy drawers in my bedroom, that kind of job. And you know what? It felt fantastic. So this week I felt a lot more like myself. And when I look to the future, my dreams feel capable, as do I, which is nice. So it's a prescription I would recommend. Slow down to speed up. This weekend is the Focus Ireland hike in Kerry. So no rest for the wicked. Every second weekend perhaps is for rest. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, following a life of learning, teaching and service, my next guest, Jared Morgan, took his experience in the academic sector and later as an executive coach into his first book, Becoming Your Best Possible Self. He joins me in studio now. Jared, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Claire, and thank you for having me.
So
really appreciate it.
Why did you want to write this book, Becoming Your Best Possible Self?
Well, I retired at 55, which is a very kind of, a lucky situation to be able to do. And I had a few things in mind. And my entire career really is about helping people and encouraging them to flourish. And I just said to myself, I have 2 sons, they're now men, and they're working away in their own way and getting on well. But I often said to myself, I wonder now, have I told them all that I know? Because I've read a lot, I've been in education for a long time, and I never was really able to sit them down for long enough. You know yourself, teenagers and kids even, how long could you sit them down and tell them all that's in the book? So in a way, that was the first impetus. During COVID lockdown, I actually sat down and said, I must put my thoughts down. And I'll hand it to both my sons and I'll say, they're the things I really want to tell you about. And I mightn't have got the opportunity, or I mightn't in the future. So I handed it to them. They were the first 2 people to get the book.
And what was their reaction?
Well, now, it was kind of cool. One is very into that whole area and the other is not so into it. So to some extent, the feedback was good. I think it'll be a drip process, a bit like yourself. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot to comprehend there. And, you know, I think over the years, hopefully it will be something they can draw on.
And at what point then did you decide, right, this is going to go further than my own family. I want this to go out further and all of the profits go to the Samaritans. So it became something bigger.
Yeah, it did become bigger because when I start doing the research and putting the time on it and I approached the publisher and they said, well, you know, before I approached the publisher, I said to myself, this would be very useful information for other people. And that was the kind of impetus to say, well, look, maybe I'll put it together. And I didn't want to do a book for financial reasons. I really wanted to do it for impact reasons. In other words, help other people beyond my family.
And the book plots a journey for the reader from the old self to the best possible self. And it is quite a journey. Can you tell us a little bit about your own?
Yeah. Now, best possible self. And sometimes people, you know, my friends look and I've heard you've written a book, Best Possible Self. Is that about you? You know, they question you about it because to some extent, it's not a destination. It's a journey. And you never really get to it because it's something, it's self-improvement on a continuum. It's not an actual destination. So, you know, some people are saying, are you the best possible self? And I said, no, I'm working on it and in my own way. And it's very personal to everyone. So best possible self to you, Claire, would be a lot different than what my best possible self would be. So in a way, that's the same for my sons. Both of them will interpret it their own way.
Yeah. And as you say, you know, the goalposts keep moving because you're constantly evolving and you're constantly changing. And so is your world
Absolutely.
Around you. So once you get the hang of one thing, as you say, something else changes, be it your family setup, be it a work change, be it a life change. So you're never really going to reach that one point.
No, no. And that's the nice thing about it, because to some extent, what I explain in the book sometimes is that there's two approaches. The old approach was kind of doing and having, you know, having possessions, and the more you have, you might be happier. And unfortunately with that, you get to a point where that's you really, if you've got the big house, you might want the bigger house and the bigger yacht. And the problem is you want more and more. And there's often isn't a point where you get to where you feel very satisfied. Now, you might, and a lot of people are, and they use their wealth for great causes, so that's very good. But with this other approach that, you know, positive psychology has documented, is that what you look at is more a personal journey of what you want to be. And your success is not necessarily the doing and the actual possessions. It's living out what is most valuable to you. So that success is quite easy to attain other than the external success, because once you get it, you want more of it. Whereas in fact, this internal success is actually a very nice place to be. And it's very satisfying. And it doesn't actually require much more if you set your values right. But you said the journey, what was my journey? My journey was, luckily, I had very, very supportive parents. I had a long career in teaching, both at second level, at PLC level. Mainly my career was in PSC, so our students after their leaving certs. I was also in Maynooth University. But I always felt my role in that whole education area was to empower people and to allow them flourish. So it's funny, when I look back on it and when I was writing this book, I said, I'm just doing the same thing as I was doing when I was working. So that was a realisation. I was also a principal for 20 years of a PLC college. I was CEO of an ETB VEC at a very young age, probably one of the youngest. And I was there for about 6 years, and I was in charge of a whole lot of schools. And I did see a lot of things there, including, you know, attending funerals of students and staff, you know, and some of them had died through suicide. And that was a quite awakening moment for me. And you asked me about the Samaritans, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to give back to the Samaritans. I've been a volunteer for the Samaritans for the last 20 years. We're usually quite secretive about that, but this is a fundraising activity, so I can be open enough about it, and the Samaritans are okay and have okayed that.
And can I ask why the early retirement at 55? Because it's interesting. It's not one you hear a lot.
I'll tell you my reasonings that were that it's actually very full on if you're in management roles. Like I was managing college with over 1,300 students, with 120 staff, all graduates, quite a huge, you know, several millions budgets, you know, and a big night school. And it was successful. And I felt I had done a lot of work there, and I felt I had empowered people, staff and others. And I felt that and a lot of my colleagues would often go much further in and would be getting to a burnout stage. And I felt I had other things I'd like to do. One of them, the book, coaching. I have a coaching qualification. I do coaching. So all of those areas I couldn't actually do in that busy lifestyle. So I'm in a unique situation where I could retire and do those things. So
yeah,
that's why I did.
And that's the self-awareness piece, isn't it? That was a check-in.
Yeah.
That was something that came to you. That was something you thought, that's right for me.
Yeah.
And so you did it. And the book covers the importance of mindset, but also our values and our beliefs. So You've already mentioned teaching, learning and service have been big values in your life. How can people identify their own values? Because that's the starting point, isn't it?
I think it is, Claire. And it's funny enough, in the research I had done, very few people actually could state what their values are. Now, you probably inherently have them. I won't push you on it, Claire, to say, well, what are your top eight values? But there is a process for working that out. And I think it's a worthwhile exercise because, in a way, if you're living and aligning your life and your decisions to your values, the decisions become much easier. But we all know, like, if we family and we're looking to have children or whatever, we know they're really important, and your own family. And that will be a value that a lot of people would put up on top. But after that, they would struggle a bit about values. So I have a whole chapter in the book about values. I thought it was that important. And the way to actually find out your values is to kind of look at people maybe who you look up to and just look at what qualities do they have and maybe write them down. Maybe have a look at, and now this would be, you know, positive role models. You could be, you know, it's not very good to look at people who are not positive role models, and their values may not be useful to you in moving on to your better self. The other thing you could do is look at, you know, when you were really headstrong about something or very passionate, and say, what was going on at that time? You know, when you took a stand for something, and you might write that down. There's also another method which I would use with a lot of students and anyone coaching or anything like that. I would say there's a list of about 100 words, and to not think too much about them and just underline them. And then you group them together into eight groups, and you try and find what's common in the groupings, and then you have your eight values. And then what you do then, this is the hardest part, you have to actually prioritize those. So what's the top one? What's the second one? So that's a real difficult process. But it's really nice having them in your hands. And I'd always have them on the mirror or in the car or something like that. And, you know, you get a phone call or you have a sudden decision to make. You just keep a quick glance on that and have it in your head. And it makes decision making a lot easier.
Yeah, well, mine are family, energy and learning.
Yeah,
they are my three. And they will always come back to, am I feeding into that? There are others, giving back. Performance is obviously in there for me somewhere.
Wellness, I'm sure.
Wellness is in there for sure. But that kind of feeds into energy. So yeah, they're just good, as you say, to have in your back pocket. And when you're caught between something, you can come back to them and they can be very motivating. And then what's the difference between values and beliefs?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it's a good question to ask, because I had to kind of think about that, you know, when you say it there, you know, to some extent, beliefs are kind of our assumptions about the world. And it's how we think things go. But values are a little bit deeper. So you might have a belief that, you know, having more money will make me happier. That's a belief. But you might have something like a value which is a little bit deeper. It's about, you know, empathy, honesty, integrity. They're a little bit deeper. They're not just one value going in one kind of thought going in one direction. Like, for example, you can have beliefs that overlap with values. You could have something like saying that, you know, inherently I believe most people are good natured. But the value behind that is kindness. So I'll be very kind, and kindness is a value for me. So I have a belief which is just a kind of an overriding thing, but the value is a little bit deeper, and I need to be kind to people, and I will be kind to people, and it will actually be something that will guide my life and my decisions. So values are deeper than beliefs. And beliefs can be very wrong as well. Now, your values could be wrong as well, and you need to evaluate them. But beliefs can be off completely because they're your view of the world.
And self-limiting beliefs can cause real damage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I go through it in depth, and I remember my son saying, God, I have to read that stuff. It's too long, you know. But I had to explain it to some extent. The limiting beliefs are very much often tied into, you know, our identity even, you know, where we feel we're not worth it. And we value ourselves maybe on things that society values us on. Money, possessions, achievements. But actually, the real positive psychology really talks about valuing yourself and accepting yourself unconditionally. So limiting beliefs often, you know, I'm too young, I'm too old, all of those things hit you when you're about to do something. And they're very limiting. And there's a long list I go through and I try and explain them. And the positive psychologists, there's a Seligman who's the guru really of positive psychology. And he talks about turnaround kind of statements where you can actually turn the limiting beliefs into positive ones. You know, I'm not powerful. I can't make decisions. I am powerful. And he explains why that, how you can actually be powerful. You're in control of certain things and there's a whole list of things. So you control the controllables, as they say.
Yeah, and I think people sometimes don't realise the negative loop that's going on in their head and that we can put the positive in there. I listened to an interesting podcast. Dermot Whelan was interviewing Cillian Murphy.
Yes,
and Cillian Murphy was talking about imposter syndrome and having imposter syndrome, but learning through repetition to get in the zone. But that he has worked with A-listers in Hollywood and you know, been up beside them in award ceremonies, and they all have it. And I think we all assume that once people reach a certain point that they've all got it sussed out. But everybody is going through the exact same struggles, and it's worth realising that sometimes it takes a little bit of work and you can get there. And look, the book is jam-packed with information, with exercises for people to really drill down and find out what it is individual to them. And you also have an abridged version. If people want to email you, they can just get the key takeaways. And in your conclusion, you say factors which bring fulfillment and happiness are growth and service. I think these are often overlooked. We're so conscious on achieving that we forget about these.
Mm. Well, growth is an interesting one because I'm giving an adult course on an exploration of personal growth. And it's an interesting area in terms of, you know, probably the biggest area for growth is to be outside your comfort zone. That being an area that you're not familiar with at all. And you can learn so much on it. For example, I learned the banjo, for example. Never played music in my life. Just this year I learned that. And it's just an assault on your brain. But it's amazing. It's just amazing what you're capable of. And it gives you that sense of, I never thought I could do it. It was painful doing it, but it's there. So growth is a really interesting thing. And if you don't challenge yourself, even adversities. I had a health issue when I was 40 and I'm a diabetic, but it was a real learning process for me. It was a real motivating thing for me. So you can learn from adversity. So all those growth opportunities need to be put into your life if they're not there. And that's something that I'd be very strong about. And that's a big conclusion in the book, that growth is important. And then service, I've been talking about that. You know, all of really what I've been doing in my life through my career is serving students and staff. That's the way I saw it. And I did a whole lot of voluntary work. And again, I feel that service. And I've reflected on my own life. And I'm 60 now and I'm saying, well, look, I better reflect on my life. And what I concluded was that they were the times of the best fulfillment and joy was serving others and not forgetting about myself. I would always say to people, you know, you have to be self-compassionate. You can't be useful to anyone else if you are not looking after yourself. So that's a really important addendum to service.
Yeah, serve yourself too.
Yes, oh, absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Attend to your own mask first.
Definitely.
Well, I think it's clear from the conversation that there are many learnings to be had from the life of Gerard Morgan, and he has poured them all into the book, Becoming Your Best Possible Self. All proceeds go to Samaritans Ireland. Do you want to give that email address or is it in the back of the book?
Yeah, it's in the back of the book, but I'll give the email. It's becomingyourbestpossibleself@gmail.com is an email that you can write to me about.
For sure. Well, Gerard Morgan, thank you so much for
coming
on.
Thank you very much, Claire. Thank you.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, Fiona Brennan, clinical hypnotherapist and best-selling author, is back in her usual therapist in agony aunt slot. And this time, it's an interesting one about in-laws, which we will get to. But first, I want to welcome Fiona, who is dialing in remotely from her other life in Greece. Fiona, you are very welcome.
Thank you, Claire. So happy to see you. It's just great.
I'm back in your agony aunt role where you belong. Although it was lovely to talk to you about your book the last time, but you were back and we do have a good listener question in a moment. But tell people a little bit about your life in Greece? Because I think it being a health and wellness show, a lot of people dream about this, and this was a dream of yours. So you live and work between Ireland and Greece now.
Yeah, this summer we're here for 3 months. And I think that's the way to phrase it, Claire. It's like we are living and working here. So essentially, working in health and wellness, as you know, it's a wonderful thing. It's a privilege. It's a joy, but it's also very intense. So I think that this is a time in my life where I'm actually taking a little bit of a step back in many ways. I'm not seeing as many clients. I am still seeing clients online, but not as many as I would usually the rest of the year. And I'm really just living that sense of appreciation and pleasure for what is here and what is now, rather than that kind of, you know, essentially waiting until the kids are older, waiting until some point in the future that unfortunately we just don't know may never come. So there's a phrase that I love and I've used before. It's like with dreams comes responsibilities. So this is the dream, but there is also, of course, there's responsibilities with it. You know, there's a sense of all of the commitments that are required when you do something like this. And I suppose I would just say to anyone out there, like, who's listening to this, like, don't delay what it is that dream is. It's not going to be necessarily plain sailing and everything. There's going to be obstacles, there's going to be challenges, but like, my God, it's so worth it. And you know, to honor yourself is to kind of implement that, to be proactive about making what it is that you want for your life. So you could say, yes, I'm definitely living the dream. I'm really just so relaxed, so happy. I'm doing a thing on Instagram at the moment where I'm sharing positive affirmations every day. I feel like this sense of, because I am so healthy and well and happy, I want to really share that as much as I can and share the light with everyone as much as I can. So that's what I'm doing.
Well, that's really you, no matter where you are, but it certainly helps when you're in the sunshine and you're doing something that you plan to do for a long time, and now you're there and in it. So it is lovely to see. And speaking of sunshine, that is the nature of our email this time. And it's an interesting one. I'm going to read it now. They say, "Dear Fiona and Claire, I'm going on holiday this year with my in-laws and literally dreading it. It feels like a chore, not something to look forward to. They want to go together every year, and for the last few years, I've managed to avoid it. This year, my husband went ahead and agreed to it without consulting me properly. He said I had agreed to it, but I honestly don't recall it. I feel furious and resentful, and there's a lot of tension between us. I work really hard and feel trapped. I want to enjoy a well-deserved break. I actually like my in-laws in small doses, but they are very intense and don't interact much with my two kids who are 10 and 12. It is awkward and exhausting. What can I do? I've had thoughts of pretending to be sick and letting them all go without me help." Well, I don't think the last suggestion is the right one. But I mean, this happens whether it's a holiday situation or Christmas or whatever it is. Bringing families together, it can be tricky, can't it?
Oh, Claire, it really can. Absolutely. And my heart goes out to this lady. But essentially, what's going on here and what we need to look at is a two-pronged approach. And there really is a sense of, first of all, communication, right? So whatever's happened with her husband or her partner is that communication hasn't been clear. So therefore, they're in this situation where she is furious and resentful. And that's not going to help anything. So essentially, what would really, the first step I would say is actually taking some time and just having a really open, honest conversation with her husband and trying to get clarity on where this miscommunication went, where he thought she had agreed and she felt that she hadn't. And just say, well, look, okay. And that can happen. You know yourself when you can have a sort of an idea and say, well, you did say that. And you say, no, I never actually said that. You know, and so it can be really it can be very triggering and create a lot of tension. So taking time, I would say the first thing is to actually just the two of them to go off and between them get some kind of clarity and peace. Because what she doesn't want to do is go on the holiday feeling angry, resentful and furious. Those are things that need to be settled before she goes. The second thing is, like, so we've got communication as number one. And the second thing I would say is from that communication, we need to look at boundaries, right? And a lot of issues arise within families, whether it's in-laws or even within your own family on holiday. And that is this sense of absolutely no boundaries and people feeling, as she said, exhausted and drained because they're just on sort of on their energy has been given out all the time and therefore they're not replenishing themselves. So one thing that I practice myself, you know, when family comes or Kieran's parents or Kieran, you know, whenever there's that sense of feeling a little bit, I suppose like what she says is trapped, a sense of I can't get out of here, it's too intense, is you've got to honor yourself and you've got to take time for yourself. And this is not a selfish thing at all to do, but simply just remove yourself from the situation. You know, maybe take an afternoon, just go off to the beach by yourself. You're going to come back so much more refreshed, so much more replenished and so much more in better form. And having said that, right, it's almost like, you know, you honor your relationship with yourself, but then you also find ways like, you know, in this situation, to me, it's really clear what needs to happen is that the parents, herself and her partner, need to take some time where it's just the two of them and let the grandparents and the children have time to bond. Because it's really, I don't know about if you've seen that in your own family, Claire, but when the parents are always there, the dynamic is so different that there isn't a sense of space for grandparents to bond with their grandchildren if the parents are always there, because it's almost like it's, you know, do you remember those dolls like where you've been pulled in two directions and it's like one arm has been pulled this
stretch
way.
Stretch Armstrong.
Stretch, was that? Yeah, that was it, exactly. And that you can feel like that when you are the parent and also the child at the same time. So removing yourself out of the situation and letting the grandparents and the children have this really special time, I think would be really helpful. Also time maybe to, I think it brings up the greater question of, you know, when you're with someone that you are taking on, if you like, that responsibility of not just the relationship itself, but the relationship to their family. And, you know, it's again, not necessarily plain sailing, but I do think it's worth honoring that, that love you have for your partner and making that effort, you know, that there is an effort that is required. So it could be something like, you know, making time where she spends time maybe just with her mother-in-law and the two of them go off maybe, you know, for a coffee together or having a look at a museum or wherever just the two of them have time together. It's almost like finding micro moments and not micro moments, but micro hours, let's say, of time to bond with each other, not necessarily in that intense way. And that just brings a different flow and energy to it. And people then have time to settle in and not feel that trapped or overwhelmed feeling. And then I suppose, you know, just to go back to the communication, I think there's always lessons when we're feeling so worked up about something, when we feel that we're being emotionally drained or challenged, it is time to pause and to stop and to really reflect and say, well, what is the lesson that I can learn here, you know, out of the situation? What how can I actually turn this around and to be intentional about it? You know, if she could, I think would be really helpful for this person is to actually say, what is the best outcome that I can have in this holiday? Right? How can I ensure that I enjoy it to the best of my ability? And when I enjoy it to the best of my ability, that's going to help the kids, it's going to help my husband, and it's going to help my in-laws. Because we really, like, energy is so contagious. And when we are feeling tense and frustrated, it ripples out and has an impact on everyone around us. So essentially, it would be really good for her to sort of sort through things herself, then to her partner, you know, about the communication. And essentially the learning there, I would say, is that in the future, they're just much more clear with each other in terms of, you know, it's almost like sometimes within this, you have to sort of almost like as if it sounds like your student would say, so are you saying that you will go on holiday with my family, just to be clear? And breaking it down in that simple way actually can avoid, let's say, this kind of frustration building.
Yeah, I mean, I can be guilty of it. And I think it comes down to taking the other person for granted sometimes, that by the time my husband wants to talk to me, I've been given so much in work or to the kids that I tend to not really pay attention. I could be half looking at my phone and I'm like, yeah, you know. And I think it's really important that we make time to really communicate and really listen to what the other person is saying. And even when I read the email, I was like, I mean, how dare he just plan that? You know, and I would, you know, the instinct is to go hot and go, how could you? We only get one holiday. We're all exhausted. The last thing we need is your mother, you know, whatever it is. And I have a really nice mother-in-law, it has to be said. I mean, it's sit down and talk, because there's so many things that probably haven't been said about their relationship with the kids, about whether, as you say, you could get some time away, about whether he would like to spend some time on his own with his dad. You know, you're so right. There's so many conversations that we don't end up having. We just assume everybody's on the same page, whereas nobody is until they're told. It's so important that we just sit down and talk these things out and properly listen and put down the phone.
Exactly. And there's actually, there's a term for that. It's called heuristics, H-E-U-R-I-S-T-I-C-S. And heuristics, and it's where we literally don't hear our loved ones. Like, it's almost like a filter, because they're so familiar to us that, like you said, you'd be on the phone, you go, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. And you're actually just not absorbing what they've said. So we are definitely all guilty of that. Like, it's very, very common. So yeah, I really wish her the best of luck. But I think it's turning this around as an opportunity to learn and to be really intentional that she's going to have a good holiday, no matter what.
And taking that time away, I mean, I can only speak from a mother perspective, but I'm sure there are dads who feel this as well, or, you know, same-sex couples. So I'm only speaking from personal experience. But that guilt of taking time for yourself and leaving this 10 and 12 year old and husband and in-laws and heading off to the beach on your own, that this is a selfish act. We need to kind of do away with that. Whoever the person is, whether it's the man of the family heading off on a golfing day, whether it's someone who goes off to do a shopping trip, whatever is your thing, it is really important that people take a proper break, because you come back better able to be a better person, be you in a couple, be you in a family, be you in a working relationship, whatever it is. Taking time away isn't selfish, it's essential.
It is. It's actually selfless, to be honest. That's the way I look at it. And we all, I know exactly what you mean. There can be that sense of, oh my goodness, it seems like, you know, I'm just thinking about myself. But essentially what you're doing is you're connecting to yourself, right? And if you don't take time to connect to yourself, you cannot really properly connect to other people, because there hasn't been that time and devotion to your to what's going on within you. So you're either suppressing emotion, or you could be releasing it in a negative way that tends to create those type of scenarios that makes everyone unhappy. So it's like, it's no different from any other relationship in our lives. Like, we need to honor it and take time to understand what's going on. And it's so essential, and it really does. Like, I've just noticed so much how all of your relationships flourish when you do that. And, you know, you might be met with opposition. You know, you might get comments, oh, look at you now taking yourself off. Oh, whatever might come, right? And just be prepared for that and say that's okay. You know, that's all right. If those, you know, if other people find it difficult, that's not your problem. You need to look after and care for yourself, and then you will be that lovely bright light for them. And again, everything I share, Claire, honestly, I do practice. It's not like I would say this and not do it myself. I really, I definitely practice it, because I know and feel and reap the rewards from it.
Yeah. No, spending time on my own is one of my most favorite things to do. And no matter how small, it really does make a difference. Thank you so much for coming on, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks very much, Fiona. And we will talk to you again next month. And to find out more about Fiona's work, you can go to thepositivehabit.com. And don't forget to send any of your queries, life issues, problems into aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. And perhaps next month she will be answering yours.
Alive and Kicking on News Talk.
Now, Helium is the National Children's Arts and Health Charity. Their creative health programme empowers young people with lifelong physical health conditions, and they've just expanded their in-person work in Cork, Limerick, Galway and the Midwest. To tell us more about Helium, I'm joined by its CEO, Helena Hugel, Saoirse O'Brien and her mum, Sheila, who have both been using all of their creative powers, and we'll find out a little bit more about how it's changed Saoirse's life in a moment. But I'm going to start with you, Helena, if that's okay, to tell us a little bit more about Helium. I touched on it there in the intro, but can you delve a bit deeper?
Sure, no problem. So we work to support children with long-term physical health conditions through the arts. So providing opportunities for joy, connection, and so important is that sense of belonging. We work with children with a variety of conditions. So when we say long-term health conditions, that could be anything from diabetes, epilepsy, could be rare conditions, cystic fibrosis, because for us, the condition doesn't matter. What children living with long-term physical health conditions experience on an ongoing basis is a sense of feeling very different, feeling very lonely, maybe a bit left out. And the irony is that, in fact, the Growing Up in Ireland report tells us that 1 in 10 children in this country are living with a long-term health condition or disability. So, in fact, children living with long-term physical health conditions are not alone. And so what our program does, and we do it all through the arts and working with professional artists, is to bring children together to experience a sense of purpose, discover self-expression and confidence through the arts. And often what we hear from parents is that after our program, their children have found this sense of purpose, but also friends to share that purpose with.
And that's so important, isn't it? Because presumably with a health condition, there are lots of appointments, there are lots of missed occasions. So to be able to come and, as you say, touch on really important parts of our health and well-being that I don't think we talk about enough, like joy, like connection.
Yes.
Obviously, the physical and mental health is important, but these are huge facets towards it. So what sort of activities would they be getting up to?
We primarily work within the visual arts. But when we say visual arts, you know, that is in its broadest sense. So and also it's very freeing. We're very process led in our workshops. So when you enter one of our workshops, for example, if I can draw the picture, you may see that the paper is not on the tables, it's on the floor. And it's a very large piece of paper. And the artist may ask the children to take off their shoes because on that day, they may be dipping their feet into paint and they may be creating marks with their feet and drawing with their feet. Also, we offer opportunities to explore the arts through technology, so perhaps through animation. And I suppose something that also the young people say a lot of is, wow, I'd never be able to do this at home because it's very messy and there's a lot of freedom in mess. So, for example, we also have something called a paint swing, you know, where there's cups with holes and paint has been put inside and then they're on a pendulum and you whip the swing and the paint spatters everywhere, you know. So art can be made in so many different ways, you know, and there's infinite possibilities in the art making, which we hope the children then embody in themselves in feeling that anything is possible. Can I just add one thing also just around how we actually reduce the barriers to participation? So what's really important is that in our workshops we have medical support. So we have a paramedic in the room, along with extra support through volunteers for children who need that one-on-one support. So often what we hear from parents is, wow, this is the first time my child has been able to participate. And my child is 10. So the first time in 10 years, my child has been able to participate in a camp. In any camp, the parents can leave their children with peace of mind that all their medical needs are understood and they're looked after. So children can relax, parents can relax, and we can just get on with making art and exploring creativity.
Well, let's hear from one of your artists. So we've got Saoirse O'Brien here in studio with us. And Saoirse, you've been taking part in some of Helium's programmes. Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to.
Well, I've been taking part in Helium since I was 7, and I started doing it in person. And then during COVID, I did it online, which was a wonderful experience because they sent you a box every week and then you'd like do it online and they'd show you how to do all the different things. And now that I've got older, I'm still doing Helium, but I've started doing YAG. And we work as a group and do things to bring in to show the people that we can do more and that we're a group of remarkable people that are doing something even more remarkable.
And do you remember what it was like going in to Helium the first time when you were 7 and how that made you feel?
Yeah, I was very scared because I'd never done anything like that before because I couldn't really do much. And The minute I went, I fell in love with it. It was my favourite thing. I always asked Mum when I was going again. I started buying clothes specifically to go to Helium because I was like, oh, I can't wait to show Kira this and all this.
And Helena said that you're meeting people who might not have the exact same condition as you, but they know about appointments. They know about, you know, having to live that little bit differently and think about their condition first. Was that really important to you?
Yeah, because it doesn't really matter what you've been through, but you've all been around the same thing. So you can always understand each other and everyone's there for each other.
And tell us a little bit about hydrocephalus that you have. What does that mean and how does that impact you?
Well, hydrocephalus, it's basically the brain fluid in my brain doesn't flow properly. So I have a tube that makes it flow. But it doesn't affect me as much as others, as like other things would affect other people. But I'm still in hospital more than others and I can't do sports and I have to be a lot more careful than my friends. And I have trouble like understanding when I say things, I need to think about them a lot more. Because I'd say them and not want people to take offence, but they might not be the nicest thing, but I don't realise.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, that can happen to all kinds of people. It's great that you're aware of it. Some people aren't in life, for sure. And to find a place where you could just be free to be yourself must have been really, really important.
Yeah, it was really important. And everybody there is so kind. And I just feel like you belong there, no matter who you are. Everybody's so welcoming and it's a lovely thing.
And your mum, Sheila, is here. Sheila, do you remember seeing the change that, you know, you can hear evident in Saoirse, how it made her feel going to Helium? What was your experience watching it happen?
Yeah, it was great because Saoirse, with the hydrocephalus, she has been in and out of hospital with her shunt. So she would be missing activities. She was held back a year from school. She gets very fatigued. So she doesn't have a peer group. She didn't have a peer group. So when I first found out about it and we sent her, I have watched her evolve. She's amazing. Saoirse went from going into a room with her head down, not talking to anybody, to now like speaking her own mind, knowing what she wants. And I don't mean like in a rude way or anything like that. She just feels supported. And not Saoirse's words, but as another child said, they found their tribe. They feel like they belong to something. And watching her go from a child that really didn't want to leave her room. She read a lot of books, but nothing wrong with that. She cried a good bit. She just didn't want to go to school. She was uncomfortable going to birthday parties and things like that. And it sounds so like a small little world like Helium. That little world has just, she's now doing drama. She's doing sewing classes. She would love to be a costume designer someday. Her limitations are limitless. I used to always put her in a box and be careful and make sure she was okay and she wouldn't hurt. And it's actually given me more support to kind of let go and trust her as a person, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Helena said that, you know, to give the impression that anything is possible. And you feel that now, Saoirse. So a costume designer will be watching you take home an Oscar. An Irish costume designer. I think I can see it in your future.
I'd hope so.
That'd be amazing. And what is the overall vision then for Helium? You've started to expand now across the country, which is really special.
Yes, yes. So we're celebrating this week because we are launching our National Creative Health Programme in Dublin and across the hospitals, but also in the community. So we'll be available to all children aged 8 up to 16 here in Dublin, long-term physical health conditions. So we truly feel we have a national presence now, particularly their online programme, which you heard Saoirse speak about, which is available to any child in the country who perhaps is rurally isolated or may perhaps for infection control reasons, perhaps does, or anxiety, don't feel it's just right time to participate in person. So with that, then, we are celebrating that kind of national reach. So in relation to the future, with the future is bright, we see ourselves now on a path perhaps of amplification. That's a bit of a big word, or influence. So what we would love to hear at the end of our current strategy, say by 2027, what we would love to hear actually is less of parents saying to us, if it wasn't for Helium, where else would we go? Or, you know, this, as I said earlier, this is the first time my child's been able to participate in a camp. We would love to hear less of that, because what we would love to know is that, and be able to influence, is local communities becoming more inclusive. So we would love to partner with other organisations, perhaps in the cultural space, to share our model and the way we work so that more young people can find their tribes easier and not necessarily it having to be come through us.
Yeah, I think that makes so sense. Important. And like, you're proof of that, Saoirse. I mean, yes, you have hydrocephalus and there are certain things that you have to think of or appointments you have to make, but that's not all you are. You have so many other parts mm-hmm. of your personality and your life that is just as important, and your eyes have been open to that a little bit more, haven't they?
Yeah, helium really helped me realise that I'm more than just like a label and like I can really do whatever.
Yeah, well, I think the future is bright. It's absolutely golden. And I think people listening, I hope people listening will take on board what you said, Helena, because I think that is the society we all want to live within. Mm. And thank you so much for coming on. It's been really illuminating talking to you all, to CEO of Helium, Helena Hugel, to Saoirse O'Brien and to her mum, Sheila. For more, you can go to helium.ie. Thank you so much, all of you, for coming on.
Thank you.
So that's it for Live and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aidan McKelvey, and Hugo Da Silva Scott, who is on sound. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.